We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, happy Monday. And we are going into this Monday very disappointed in Congress and the Republican majority and Speaker Johnson. And unfortunately, this is not unusual. I interviewed Alan Mashburn, pastor and former lieutenant governor candidate from North Carolina last week on this whole continuing resolution and the aversion Republicans have to even being potentially blamed in the media for a government shutdown. Oh, no. And he expressed, I think, afterwards, he said, you know, sorry, I took a little bit to express myself. I just couldn't get there to say I really have no faith at all in the Republican Party. And, you know, was wanting to kind of say, you know, maybe there was a glimmer of hope, but just couldn't get there. And turns out he was right. And I think a lot of us have predicted this, unfortunately, that Congress has now reached a deal, they say the House with the Senate and Speaker Johnson with Chuck Schumer, to avoid a government shutdown with a continuing resolution. But the failure here, to me, and then we're going to get to Chris Woodward, who is our great AFN reporter, for his comments on this. But the really disappointing thing to me is that I don't care. And I think that most conservatives don't care if there is a government shutdown, because the entire government isn't shutting down. It's just, quote unquote, non-essential personnel. And if the government isn't funded for a little bit, that's actually a good thing. We're probably saving money. We don't need a ton of these services that are funded anyways. And this continuing resolution, the compromise was, of course, to take the SAVE Act, which would have secured elections and simply said that you have to prove your citizenship in America to vote in American elections, which seems like a nonpartisan no-brainer. That, of course, was taken out because the Democrats said we're never going to agree with it, which raises a very important question, I think, of why the Democrats don't want people to have to prove their citizenship in order to vote in U.S. elections. But what is Speaker Johnson thinking? I mean, this everybody lauded him, including President Trump, saying you got to keep the SAVE Act in the continuing resolution. And the only power that he has to force the SAVE Act, because they're not going to vote for it otherwise, is to attach it to a continuing resolution and do some kind of maneuver like this to force their hand. And if the government shuts down right before the election, that's actually a good talking point for Republicans. Who cares what they say on MSDNC? It doesn't really matter. Actually do it. But of course, now, you know, probably what's going to come out with Speaker Johnson today, and this is my prediction, is that he's just going to say, well, this is now the continuing resolution only funds the government through December, you know, through mid-December. So that'll be after the election. It won't be as political at that point. And we'll go back and try to push this through next time. Well, it's always political. There's always a reason to cave and to not, I mean, there's always another election looming. There's always another issue looming. And if you're not standing firm now, what are you even doing? So let's bring on Chris Woodward, who, as I said, is the newscast coordinator for American Family News. And you can find American Family News online. You can also follow them on X to get great top trending topics from a Christian worldview perspective and great reporters. So good morning, Chris.
Good morning. I have to tell you, I kind of giggled a little bit there when you talked about how, you know, it was going to be less political after the election. It's always political, as you said.
Right. I mean, so obviously what Speaker Johnson is thinking is, well, we don't want to have all of this attention and negative headlines on Republicans and affect that down ballot and everything before the election. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be some excuse after the election. So where do we sit in terms of this continuing resolution? I mean, the SAVE Act isn't in it, but what actually is?
Yeah, well, they're going to spend money. It does include funding to beef up security for presidential candidates and the president. That's a good thing. But the thing that a lot of people on the right were looking for and expecting was the legislation regarding the SAVE Act to ensure that non-citizens, illegals, are not voting in our election, which is something many people on the left says doesn't happen, but many people on the right say is happening. This morning, Rusty Pugh, our morning anchor, has a soundbite from Congressman Jeff Van Drew talking about how he's concerned now that non-citizens will be voting in this election. And then, of course, last week, there was a story out of Fox News that found the Oregon DMV had mistakenly registered non-citizens to vote. And, you know, they claimed to have fixed the error. But how many people were registered before Fox News and other outlets found out about it? And how many people across all the other states have been registered to vote, even though they're not supposed to?
Right. And that's exactly the point, Chris, is that so many conservatives are asking states to clean up their voter rolls and ensure that only people eligible are actually still on the voter rolls. I mean, just like people who have perhaps died since the last election or moved out of state. There are a lot of reasons why people who even were eligible to be on the voter rolls are no longer eligible. And so this whole idea of cleaning up the voter rolls, again, seems to be a no-brainer. And if the left is continuing to claim, well, this never happens that non-citizens register and they actually get to vote, then what's their problem with the SAVE Act?
Yeah, right. I know. And, you know, the left is really good at doing that because they know they have a lot of allies in the media that are going to back them up on that, and they're going to have moderators and debates, and they're going to have hosts on TV shows that are left-leaning, and the ladies on The View that are all going to say all these things are just talking points by Republicans. There's not a shred of evidence. And then, of course, Newsbusters and other outlets come out with information saying, oh, yes, there is. So that's why it's important that you actually I know it's time-consuming, America, but do pay attention to these things. Seek these things out. Share articles. Email your congressman. Email your senator. Let them know that these things are happening, or at least they're in the news, so that way the information is spread out there to kind of balance the claims, the false claims, from all the people on the left that are controlling the majority of information and say, this is not true. Here's the actual evidence. You need to fight this.
Yeah, and that's what is so important, is to raise our voices and ensure that we are heard with our representatives in Washington, and to tell them, quite frankly, today, if you agree with me and you agree with Chris about the SAVE Act, and that it's an important thing to ensure that our elections have integrity, that they're protected, and that only citizens, U.S. citizens, vote in U.S. elections, then call your representative and ask their office why Speaker Johnson allowed this, and especially call Speaker Johnson's office and tell him that you want him to stand firm. And this continuing resolution is only through December 20th. So the Republicans do have another opportunity. But I can imagine if the down ballot races are this thin of a majority for the Republicans after November 5th, Chris, or if the Republicans even lose the majority, then there's no leverage there. I mean, then the Democrats can say, OK, fine, well, we're just going to extend this till everybody's sworn into the new Congress.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them changing at all. I probably see them getting weaker going into that late of a date in December, only because unless they win, you know, 85% of the seats in the House, which is not likely in any election in any era, unless they win just some incredible number of seats and therefore they can do whatever they want, I don't know that Republicans are really going to hold the line that close to Christmas, because then the concern is, what is this going to do to us over Christmas? We're going to have our names in the headlines. It's going to be a black Christmas, according to Senator Schumer and all these other people, because these MAGA Republicans are holding your, you know, government at threat and all these other nonsensical claims that they're known for making. This was probably the last stand for this fight. And come December, it's going to be an 11th hour. Hey, we're going to fund the government up until Easter or something like that, if I had to guess.
Yeah, and I think that's probably an accurate and apt prediction, unfortunately. And part of this continuing resolution was to not fund the government so far that whoever is in the new administration, whether that's Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, that that they could have some negotiating room with Congress then, you know, coming in, and it didn't bind the government too far into their administration. But now, you know, all of the leverage really is gone and is evaporated. I mean, why do Republicans care so much that the Democrats are using these talking points when clearly if they were the ones that refused to vote for this, they would be the ones responsible for government shutdown? Yeah, I've seen on X and social media, I mean, everybody left is repeating those talking points that it would be Republicans responsible for it. Yet if they're completely inverting the news cycle, and somehow Republicans continue to be afraid of that.
Yeah, I think it's because of this, and I've probably said it on your show before. I know I've said it on Today's Issues and some other programs. For a long time now, certainly for the last couple of decades, Democrats run to win and Republicans run not to lose. And that's why they always talk these big things, and they seem like they're going to be tough on this particular issue. And then they're the ones that move. They're the ones that blink, because they run not to lose. They're always worried about what somebody's going to say to them or what it's going to mean in the next election. That's why I laughed when you said it's going to be less political after the election, because politics never ends. Representatives run every 2 years. So immediately after the election, Speaker Johnson, whether or not he's going to be House Minority Leader Speaker Johnson in the next election or he's going to be Speaker again, they're automatically starting to think about the next time around, because they never stop running. And that's why, especially in the House, these things happen, and then I have to come on here and talk about it.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it unfortunate? I mean, I had a whole other segment planned this morning that we'll get to later in the week. But, and then this happened late last night, and I thought, wow, we got to talk about this, because this is so disappointing. Mm-hmm. That, and I love how you put that, Chris, that, they're just continuing to run, and politics is always on the table. And it seems like our representatives are never actually representing us. But I love how you put that Democrats run to win, Republicans run not to lose. I think that is perfectly summed up in terms of what we're seeing in Washington, unfortunately, from the conservative side. And, you know, I personally, as a conservative, would like even though it's a slim House majority right now, to actually represent my interests and hold the line, regardless of what the media says. I mean, they have enough people who are championing them and are pushing that and will combat the narrative on at least social media and some of the other outlets. And who even watches MSDNC anymore that even would care or would listen to conservatives? I mean, the entire idea that the media and the Fourth Estate controls some of these headlines and controls how Washington operates because of the negativity there is absolutely absurd. But speaking of the negative media, in just the last couple of minutes I have with you, for those who may be new tuning into the program, and we also do a live stream on X, so welcome to all of our listeners who are listening via American Family Radio. You can follow at AFRNet on X. Also, we stream on Facebook, a couple of other platforms. But for those who are new, tell us a little bit about American Family News and how and why they should read, of course, and then where they can find those headlines.
Yes, thank you very much. So American Family News is the news division of American Family Association. We exist in two platforms, radio and print news, which is cool because if you like to hear your news, you can catch us at the top of every hour on AFR stations, as well as about 100 or so non-AFR stations that now air our news at the top of the hour on their stations. But as far as print news goes, do check out AFN.net, because many, if not most, of the stories you hear on the news, on the radio, those things do wind up as print articles, but there's a ton of information on AFN.net that we don't even get to just due to time limits on American Family Radio News. So do check out AFN.net. We've got Associated Press content. We've got videos, columns, even a political cartoon. And to help you save time in this very busy news cycle, we have a latest from the web section that we put together throughout the day, where we put some big articles from all kinds of websites in that section, so that way you don't have to surf the web to get information that you can trust.
That's great. And you can follow American Family News for all of the headlines as well on X at AFN_network, American Family News. And so thanks so much to Chris Woodward, who is the newscast coordinator for American Family News and often heard on Today's Issues right here on American Family Radio Network. And we will take a break from the ranting and be right back with more on election integrity and continuing to rant about that. We come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. If ending babies' lives in their mother's womb isn't heartbreaking enough, the Biden-Harris administration punishes those who protect life, including up to 10 years in jail. In a shocking stance, the Democrats' vice presidential nominee, Tim Walz, supports infanticide, meaning the death of newborns. When will this madness end? Preborn's network of clinics is positioned in the highest abortion areas in the country, on standby to protect and love mothers facing unplanned pregnancies. By introducing a woman to her baby through ultrasound and showering her with God's love, her baby's chance at life doubles. But they can't do it without our help. If you are pro-life, please consider a donation of any size to support the mission of Preborn. All gifts are tax deductible and will help defend the defenseless. One ultrasound is just $28, or five ultrasounds is $140. $5,000 will sponsor ultrasounds for Preborn's entire network for a full day. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR, preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of election integrity and just ensuring that our elections are safe and secure, which everyone, regardless of party or partisanship, should agree on. This headline coming from the very non-biased, of course, Washington Post. Pro-Trump Georgia Election Board votes to require hand counts of ballots. Critics plan to sue, saying the new requirement would almost certainly lead to errors and could disrupt the process of certifying the vote in a crucial battleground state. So it goes on to say that the Georgia State Election Board approved a rule Friday requiring counties in the critical presidential battleground to hand count the total number of ballots this year, potentially up ending the November election by delaying the reporting of results. So, again, very unbiased reporting there. The move, according to the Washington Post, was spearheaded by a pro-Trump majority that has enacted a series of changes to the state's election rules in recent weeks and approved the hand count requirement despite a string of public commenters who begged board members not to. Well, for a little more perspective on this issue, let's welcome in Cleta Mitchell, who is a fellow with the Conservative Partnership Institute and an attorney. Cleta, is this doomsday in Georgia or actually a good election integrity measure?
It is. Well, good morning, Jenna. It's great to be with you. Typically, you can just imagine that if you read it in the Washington Post, it's the opposite of what they're saying. If you can believe this, Jenna, here's what the left's collective heads are exploding about. The new rule simply says that on election day, they have to hand count the number, not the votes, not the candidate tallies, just how many ballots are in the tabulator at the end of the day on election day. It is something they do every day during advance voting. This would just say they have to also do it when at the end of election day, and then they have to compare that number of ballots to the number of ballots the tabulator machine says that it has processed. And those two numbers need to match. And if they don't, then they need to go back and figure out what is the discrepancy here. And the I tell you that this is one of the rules that, I mean, it's basic common sense the board passed another rule, that the left and the Democrats and the Kamala Harris crazies are also upset about, that requires that at the end of the voting, between the election day and before certification on the following Monday, that they must go through and count the number of voters. Georgia law already requires a daily numbered voter list, how many voters showed up to vote at this location. And that number, added to the election day number, has to match so the number of votes and the number of ballots. So those three numbers are supposed to match. It's called reconciliation. It is required by law, and it is the only way to ensure accuracy in the elections. And here's the bottom line. These Democrats, these progressive left-wing Democrats, they do not want accuracy. And guess what happens when you don't have accuracy? You open the door to what happened in 2020, where there were counties all over Georgia where the number of ballots issued did not match the number of votes and didn't match the number of voters. And so there are discrepancies all over the state from 2020. And you had ballots in Fulton County that were run through the tabulator more than once. We know that. They've admitted that. There were several thousand, at least 3,000 ballots that were tabulated twice in Fulton County alone. And so this is an effort to say, here's what the law says. We're going to implement the law by having these rules that all the counties can step by step know that this is what they have to do to ensure that before they certify the election that the numbers match and that the count is accurate. That's what they're upset about. You tell me why they're upset about that.
Right. So I'm speaking with Cleta Mitchell, who is an attorney and a fellow at the Conservative Partnership Institute. And it seems like just counting to ensure reconciliation and that the numbers match, that's not going to delay certification. And the law, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, the law hasn't changed in terms of the certification deadlines. So even if it takes them a little bit more time, I mean, you still have in place all the certification deadlines, but that seems to be the number one objection by a lot of these left-wing attorneys and, you know, other members of the leftist media that, oh, this is going to delay certification. I mean, even here in the Washington Post, that's what they're claiming critics are saying. But I don't see that happening because the law there hasn't changed. So what is their beef actually? I mean, what are they going to litigate over?
Well, here's what they can't say. They cannot say why they really object to this. Why they really object is because they know that they were able to play fast and loose with the rules in Georgia in 2020, and they were able to they like the chaos. They like it when things don't match. They like it when it's not orderly. I'm not making this up. They prefer chaos, and because out of chaos comes opportunity to manipulate the outcome. And I firmly believe that that's why they're upset, because you're right. The deadline for certification is 5 p.m. on the Monday following the election. The issue is finding any discrepancies in advance, immediately after the polls close on election day, just making sure the numbers match. Any county that has a brain for an election administrator will make sure that those numbers are matching every day of advance voting. So all they have to do is add in the election day numbers, make sure they match, and not just send over to the county a bunch of numbers that don't bear any resemblance to one another. And that's really, this is just common sense, frankly. It's what the bank teller has to, their cash drawer at the end of the day has to tally. The grocery store clerk, have you ever been standing in line at the grocery store when the shift changes and they take out one cash drawer? And the other person brings her cash drawer or his cash drawer. Those are all counted in advance before they start their shift. They're counted again at the end. All the numbers have to match, have to account for every transaction. Our ballots, our votes are surely as important as the money and the teller's box at the grocery store or at the clerk's office at the grocery store, the teller's cash drawer at the bank. This is just basic transactional integrity. That's all it is.
Yeah, and in common sense, as you mentioned, Clita. And so, you know, why wasn't it law before this that if the state is already counting and reconciling ballots that come in before the election and early voting, that Election Day itself didn't have reconciliation?
Well, you know, it's a really good question, Jenna. The problem is that that Brad Raffensperger is the Secretary of State of Georgia, and he's a moron. And honestly, some of the guidance that comes out of that office, you just have to wonder what code of elections is he basing that on? It certainly isn't Georgia. And so every county was doing it differently. Some counties were reconciling. Most counties were reconciling, but many counties were not. And so they're all doing it differently. This creates just a uniform procedure that everybody can know in advance that this is what they're supposed to do. Once the polls close on Election Day, they just have to follow these procedures. And if they are planning properly and doing their work properly, there shouldn't be any problem. There shouldn't be a discrepancy between what is on the tabulator and the number of ballots inside the tabulator. But if there is a discrepancy, don't we want to know that? They should want to know that. And the testimony on Friday was pretty damning when it talked about, you had a number of people testifying before the board about all of the counties and the discrepancies that the number of ballots didn't match the number of tabulation, the number shown in the tabulators, and all the errors that have happened, not just in 2020, but in 2022, that only were resolved ultimately by going back through and hand counting the number of ballots and realizing that the tabulator had missed and not counted literally hundreds of ballots, or in some one case, more than thousands of ballots. So, you know, I don't understand why anyone is opposed to accuracy, but these people decide. Mark Elias, the Democrats' primary attorney, he decides on a narrative, and man, they just all run with it. It doesn't matter whether it's true, and of course the newspapers, the establishment media, never print both sides of the story. They never do. They just print their side of the story.
Yeah, of course. And I'm speaking with Clita Mitchell, who is an attorney and a fellow at the Conservative Partnership Institute, about really important measures that are being taken in the various states for election integrity. And this has been, you know, an ongoing, decades-long issue and something that state legislatures really do need to contemplate and to continue to ensure and safeguard our elections, like we were talking about in the earlier segment about the SAVE Act. I mean, it's ridiculous and patently absurd that Democrats are opposed to ensuring that only U.S. citizens vote in U.S. elections. I mean, all of this seems very nonpartisan. Like, if there's anything that lawmakers from the state and federal level can agree on, it's to simply ensure, as you said, accuracy in the count of ballots and ensuring that we know the legitimate outcome. And so while this is a big deal in Georgia, and, you know, I've even spoken to a couple reporters who, you know, asked me over the weekend, like, oh, is this a big deal in Georgia? And I'm going like, no, like the left is just making this a big deal. Do other states already have this same rule in place that Georgia is just now mirroring, that we can point to say, you know, look, this really isn't that big of a deal?
Well, Pennsylvania has a reconciliation law, and understand this. Georgia's law requires reconciliation. It's just that they haven't been doing it. The Pennsylvania law requires reconciliation, making sure the numbers match. It's just that they quit doing it in Pennsylvania. They didn't do it in 2020, and therefore there was a discrepancy statewide between the number of ballots and the number of votes and the number of voters. Those numbers didn't match in Pennsylvania. They didn't match in Michigan. And so those of us in the election integrity movement, what we've been doing is realizing here's what the law requires, and there just need to be procedures put in place by those who administer and execute the laws. That is the executive branch. They're supposed to execute the laws enacted by the legislature. But in the election contest, they just don't.
And I think that's a really important point to underscore, Cleta Mitchell, that this already was the law, and if the administrators weren't following it or they didn't have uniform procedures, that's all that now this new rule is requiring. It's not some big change to procedures. It's just ensuring that they follow this process, and that's good for everyone, ultimately. And so are there consequences attached in this new rule if a county or a district doesn't follow now these standardized procedures?
Well, as with most things in election law, they're not necessarily self-executing. And I wouldn't say that I don't recall a penalty being imposed on election officials who fail to follow the law. But there ought to be, honestly, there ought to be significant penalties for failure to follow the law. But, I'm going to presume that they won't just ignore the rules. But the Democrats, of course, have challenged. They've already challenged the rule that defines to certify an election, meaning to, and they took the language straight from the Federal Election Assistance Commission guidelines on certifying the election, but they included some language, after reasonable inquiry, which means that they're supposed to make certain that all of the facts that they're certifying are true. The board members who certify the election have to sign under penalty of perjury that the results I'm certifying are true and accurate, and they sign that under penalty of perjury. And so the Democrats have sued because they don't like the language after reasonable inquiry. They say that's what they say is going to trigger this massive delay in certification. And, of course, it doesn't change, as you pointed out earlier, it doesn't change anything about the data certification. It just imposes a duty on those who are our election officials, and in this case the election officials in Georgia, to look at everything that they have, the election materials, to count, to reconcile the numbers, and just when they sign that form that the results are accurate, that they are actually making an educated, informed statement that I have done everything I can do, and to the best of my knowledge, these are accurate. Literally, the Democrats are arguing to the court that the duties of the election boards are ministerial or ceremonial only, and that they have no ability to look into whether these results are accurate. They are literally arguing that to a court, that board members have no oversight over the election administration, and they're just supposed to sign those forms under penalty of perjury, not knowing whether they're signing something that is inaccurate or accurate. That's their argument to the court.
Wow. I mean, and that is wild to me because, anything that is a legal document really like that, and as an attorney, if you sign a verified complaint in a court, you are saying that you've basically that as an attorney, you've done your due diligence. That's all that means. It's not that, you couldn't later go back and amend it if you find out something, but it's basically just saying and affirming that you've done your due diligence. And so it sounds like to me that the left doesn't want to put any duty on election administrators to actually do their due diligence and to just say turn a blind eye basically and just say, well, these are the numbers and we don't know whether they're right or wrong, accurate or not. We're just going to go ahead and do that without any kind of due diligence. What kind of administrators then are they? I mean, in no other context, I mean, just like you mentioned, grocery stores and banks and retail outlets, I mean, they all do reconciliation, but it's like somehow we take all of the common sense safeguards out of the way when it comes to our elections. And I think that's what conservatives, by and large, are really frustrated with, because we all want to know that our election results are accurate. And so in the last few minutes I have with you, Cleta Mitchell, and I so appreciate you joining, where are we at headed into 2024 with, some of these good rule changes and, where are we at, especially in the swing states headed into the presidential election?
Well, that's a whole hour, Jenna. I'll have to come back.
Sounds good.
We could go in one by one, but I will tell you that we're a lot better off than we were 4 years ago because of all the many volunteers across the country who've really been working their local election officials and really trying to understand the process, and they're seeing what's going on. There are a lot of of lawsuits that have been filed before the election, simply to say to election boards and officials, follow the law. Just follow your law. You're not, the way you're doing this violates the law. And trying to get those things resolved in advance of the election so that we can have a smooth running election where we can have confidence that the results are accurate. So, look, we're in a tough struggle in every one of the battleground states because the chaos that is sown by the progressive Democrats and all these left-wing voting groups is they've had control of this for the last decade, and they don't like the fact that now we have all these patriotic Americans who are citizen volunteers who are going toe-to-toe with them, and they don't like it, and they call us names, and they want to put us in jail, as you well know. But honestly, we just have to keep doing the best we can do to make sure that the laws are followed and that the process is transparent and that in the final analysis, the results are accurate. And that's what we're dedicated to. And I think, you know, we got a lot of people working really hard to make sure that that happens. And I'm very grateful to every one of them.
And you are one of the leaders on this, and I'm very grateful for you and your work at the Conservative Partnership Institute, Cleta. You have done so much work on this, and you've been a tireless advocate for election integrity, and I really appreciate that, and I know that all of our listeners who are concerned about this issue are grateful to you as well. And so just really quickly, if people want to get involved, how should they contact CPI and maybe get engaged?
Well, I would urge everybody to two things. Number one, vote in person the first day you can. Go claim your name, claim your vote. Under no circumstances, unless you just absolutely have no other choice, don't put your ballot in the mail. Do not put a ballot in the mail. Hand deliver your ballot. Everybody in the sound of my voice needs to vote. Make sure all your friends and family vote. Go vote in person. And the second thing is get involved. Sign up to be a poll worker, a poll watcher. Call your local election office. The RNC has a site called Protect the Vote. Sign up there and they'll deploy you in one of the battleground states. But if you're not in a battleground state, you should still get involved.
Still get involved. And thanks so much, Cleta Mitchell. We're already out of time, but we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Well, speaking of issues that should not be partisan or political, but of course are, because that's how the left works, and from election integrity to things like abortion and the abortion pill, of course, the leftists and Kamala Harris and her campaign are all politicizing and actually putting out false information about the tragic death of a young woman named Amber Thurman, a Georgia woman, following preventable complications from taking the abortion pill. And so Advancing American Freedom, that group that was founded by former Vice President Mike Pence, has put out a thread and a lot of good, accurate information to correct the misinformation that the left and the Democrats are putting out, simply trying to say that, you know, look, in the wake of Dobbs now, this is exactly what we expected. And, you know, these deaths are because of the Trump abortion bans, and they're framing it that way. But the truth actually is what conservatives have been saying all along, that women should not be taking this abortion pill and they should not be having at-home abortions because there are known foreseeable complications and risks that can ultimately, unfortunately and tragically, lead to the death of not only this young mother, but her twin unborn baby. So let's welcome in Jonah Wendt, who is a policy advisor for Advancing American Freedom. And Jonah, so kind of give us a backdrop of, you know, I kind of summarized that very briefly, but the truth about this tragic situation of this Georgia woman and why we need to correct the misinformation.
Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate the opportunity to come talking about this. So this, as you mentioned, is just an overall tragic situation. Everyone talking about the situation needs to take that first and foremost. Three Americans are dead, and the little boy no longer has his mom. Why? Because of the lies spread by the abortion movement, and now are being told again at the highest levels of the Democratic Party. Here are the facts of the situation. She took the chemical abortion pill at 9 weeks gestation. That pill was previously only approved at 7 weeks, but every Democrat administration was taking more and more restrictions protecting women and children off of the pills. And so now it was originally approved at 7 weeks. She took it at 9 weeks. They took off the regulations, making it even more dangerous.
Wow. And this is just so incredibly sad that, you know, now at about 9 weeks, I mean, she's taking this drug and she apparently had to go out of Georgia to get the abortion pill. And then came back home, had complications, didn't go into the emergency room. And this is, you know, from the reporting that's available, and then went into the emergency room, and then there weren't as many life-saving procedures as there should have been. So there may have also been medical malpractice here. And so so the point of this is to say, well, let's get to the facts instead of Kamala Harris saying, you know, look, this is what happens when you don't allow for safe abortions. And there's no such thing, by the way, as a safe abortion, because if abortion goes as intended, which is the medical intervention designed to intentionally cause the death of an unborn child, then somebody, at least one person, dies through an abortion. So there are no safe abortions, but the left is suggesting that we need to have safe abortions so that things like this don't happen. But I mean, it was just, you know, earlier this year and last year that we were all talking on the conservative level about the dangers of the abortion pill and, you know, these types of deregulations around it. And so, you know, why isn't this being pushed back as strongly from the pro-life movement as it should? I mean, there are organizations like yours, Live Action, and others, you know, that definitely are. And obviously here we're talking about it. But it seems like the left gets away with these kind of fear-mongering false narratives all too often.
Yeah, you know, that's absolutely right, Jenna. And I think part of this is that a lot of Republicans, particularly in the wake of the Dobbs decision, have become scared of their own shadow when it comes to talking about abortion. You've seen this from basically every level of the ballot. People who used to consider themselves strong pro-life conservatives are no longer calling themselves that and speaking openly about it. And Democrats are putting Republicans completely on defense. If you see any of the ads floating around TV right now, everything the Democrats are putting out is abortion ban, abortion ban, abortion ban. And Republicans are quite frankly too scared to fight back at this point, and they're letting the Democrats lie, take the field. And that's part of the reason why we put out this memo, is we wanted to equip members of Congress and their staff and Republicans at every level, conservatives at every level, to push back on just the lies of the abortion movement at this point. There's basically nothing true that Kamala Harris is stating when she's saying the Trump abortion ban caused this. No, deregulating the abortion pill caused this. No, the doctor, the supposed doctor in South Carolina who, because she was stuck in traffic, decided to give her chemical abortion pills instead of a surgical abortion, shows you how much even the abortionists care about women. Like, there's this down the line, we continue to let the left dominate the narrative without taking it head on. That's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. And it's just so sad, Jonah Wendt, that conservatives and Republicans in particular are standing down on the abortion issue. Of course, you know, the GOP weakened their platform on that issue. And somehow now that we've won this resounding victory for the pro-life movement in the Dobbs decision, that now we're standing down and not continuing the fight and following through, because it was not the goal of conservatives to just say, okay, let's overturn Roe versus Wade. And now that the issue is primarily at the states, now we're fine if states like California and Colorado and others want to have abortion legalized literally until the moment of birth. We're fine as long as the states decide. I mean, that has never been a policy interest of the pro-life movement. And yet it's very difficult, even in my own home state of Florida, to get stalwart conservatives like Representative Anna Paulina Luna. I'll call her out by name. She was an ardent pro-life advocate and now won't even come out and comment how she personally is going to vote or oppose Amendment 4, which is the most extreme constitutional amendment, state constitutional amendment on abortion on the ballot this November. I mean, so for conservatives like that, my question to her is, why aren't you actually standing up for life when you promised to do that as a campaign issue?
That's 100% correct, and that's certainly not surprising. If you remember in the wake of the Dobbs decision being leaked, the multitude Republican outcry wasn't about what it wasn't saying this is a great decision for life. It was decrying the actual leak itself instead of championing what was going on. Everyone hid behind that instead of saying, like, this is what we ran on, this is what we said we're going to do, and we finally accomplished it. And you know it as well as I do, Jenna, Republicans don't need a roadmap to retreat. They're pretty good at retreating on basically every issue.
Yeah, like we saw with the continuing resolution last night in Congress. And this is why so many conservatives don't really have confidence in the Republican Party to represent conservative values, which is what the Republican Party pretends to do. But that's why groups like Advancing American Freedom are so important. And by the way, you can go to advancingamericanfreedom.com, and there is a tab on the right-hand side, and you can go down to policy advocacy in that drop-down list and see the September 18th memo that's titled The Truth About the Georgia Abortion Death. There's also one that's titled Yes, Late-Term Abortions Happen, because that's also a myth perpetuated by the left about abortion that, you know, no, there are no abortions that ever happen in the third trimester. That's just Republican fear-mongering. Yet I'm aware in my former home state of Colorado that, no, we have virtually no restrictions on abortions. And so, yes, late-term abortions happen. We need to do a better job at messaging this correctly. So how can, beyond reading your memos at advancingamericanfreedom.com, how can conservatives get engaged and actually help this issue and spread the truth instead of the misinformation from the left?
Yeah. So the great opportunity with life is that you can actually help your neighbors with it. Arguing on the internet, honestly, probably can change a lot of people's opinions, but there's, in every single community, there's probably a pro-life pregnancy center. Call them, see what they need, go volunteer, drop off a meal for a parenting class, bring diapers, milk, supplies. These are all ways you can actually help people who are in the situation right now of, do I need to get an abortion? There was a study done a few years ago, and it came back, and it basically said that people who are women who received an abortion said if like one person had stood next to them and said they would have helped, that they wouldn't have gotten an abortion. So we need to be on the ground helping these women and letting them know that they're not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is where, again, another myth from the left is that conservatives and Christians in particular are just pro-birth and don't care about what happens after that. That could not be further from the truth, because we all know as Christians, and you're a Christian as well, Jonah, and I've had the privilege of getting to know you more, you know, over this last year with a lot of this advocacy for truth, that the Christian worldview is to advance the ultimately the Great Commission, and which is to teach the truth about the gospel and the good news of Jesus Christ. And that means that, of course, we care about everyone, every human being made in the image of God who has inherent dignity and worth from the moment of conception all the way until natural death. And there are so many ways that we show that. And yet the big abortion industry tries to say that just because we don't want children to be murdered in the womb, that somehow we are just pro-birth and then we don't care. And there are so many different ways that the church consistently proves that wrong, but yet the left routinely just pushes that false lie onto conservatives. And so I think it's very well said that we should get involved and at our local level. But this is why policy matters as well. And the policy surrounding the entire life issue has to be championed, especially at the states now. And so how is Advancing American Freedom doing that? And how can people get engaged with your organization on these important policy issues?
Yeah, so Advancing American Freedom, we focus a lot on the federal level, but we're more than happy to help out on the state level if we think that there's a place where we can have a large impact. And you guys can learn more about Advancing American Freedom by going to advancingamericanfreedom.com.
Well, thanks so much, Jonah.
One goal right now is pushing back on the left's lies about the current situation, the tragic situation occurring in Georgia.
Yeah, and that is such an important narrative to push back on, and in misinformation and the lies. And so again, if you're on social media as a listener, or you just even have, you know, friends or colleagues who are talking about this, you can give them a copy of this memo, post it on your social media. I'd encourage you to do that. You can go to advancingamericanfreedom.com, and then again, go to that right hand side, there's a tab, at least if you're on a desktop like me, and then you can go down to policy advocacy and see that memo. But Jonah Wendt, your policy advisor for Advancing American Freedom, really appreciate your time this morning and your dedication to fighting for the truth. And this is what policy is all about, and why Christians have to be engaged, is because we have to combat all of the lies of the left saying that they are more pro-woman, more, you know, pro quote-unquote reproductive freedom and all of that than conservatives and Christians are. And that is absolutely a lie. it is absolutely a lie. Christians, and therefore conservatives, because our policy views need to be grounded in the truth as our number one value, and so therefore inform our policy, says that we believe that every human being, and we know and recognize every human being, has inherent dignity from conception all the way until natural death, and that our policy in a legitimate government that has objective moral truth at its foundation has to recognize that, and we have to champion policy that reflects that. So we have to get engaged, and I think that's a very apt admonition. So continue to combat the lies with the truth as we do here each and every morning here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We're already out of time. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. Go and speak the truth today. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.